Stay tuned for Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah, featuring two film critics with distinctly different tastes in movies, Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net. He thinks her tastes are shallow. She thinks his are pretentious. Listen in as they discuss and debate new releases and other film-related topics. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell alongside the wonderful Hannah Buchdahl.
Hey, thanks, Charlie.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Well, I hope you're not too sore about the wine situation tonight. It's like a double bottle.
Yeah, you know, I think after my brilliant stroke of wine last week with Dark Horse, I think this is a little weak, but you know.
This was a gift from a neighbor.
Uh-huh.
For, I don't know, lifting something one day, and they gave me like a 4-gallon bottle of wine that it cost probably about $4.
And it tastes like it's worth every penny.
Let's see. Number one, there's a lot of movies this week. Mm-hmm. Animated movie. Oh, that's right. We went to separate places to watch this movie because it was screening at the same time. I went downtown, and you didn't go because you were afraid of the Metro. So you drove all the way up into the heart of Maryland to watch this movie.
I was not afraid of the Metro. I actually went to where I knew it would take me the exact same amount of time, and there'd be plenty of free parking available. And it turns out all the cool kids from the our screening group were actually, from our critics group, were at the same screening I was.
Well, I got to see this at the National Geographic Museum.
In 2D.
Which is awesome. I didn't want to see this in 3D. You know that's a plus one in my column.
That's right. And I saw it in Columbia, Maryland in 3D. But go ahead. Nat Geo, how was that experience?
I didn't go into the museum. I just went to the theater. But I got swag. He didn't get swag.
We did not get book. Swag.
So the movie we're talking about is the Angry Birds movie. It is now famous because it's the first movie ever made based on a smartphone application. It's not a video game. It's technically a video game movie, but not like Super Mario Brothers or Doom or even Ratchet and Clank. It's a smartphone app movie,
it's
Hannah.
It's an app. And it's an app that pretty much had its heyday when this movie was probably just being made. And it took several years to get finished. And that app is no longer so hot.
Does anyone still play it?
I don't know. I don't know many people. I deleted it probably well over a year ago.
I have never played it, and I know there's inside jokes in there because I didn't get something, but the rest of the audience would go, ah, and it's like, oh, okay, that's something.
Yeah, there were just lots of things. There's like TNT, you know, boxes of bombs, and there's
green pigs
and slingshots, and yeah, there's just all these elements that came from the app that are just thrown into this movie, and whether or not they add up to a good movie, I don't know. What did you think, Charlie?
Oh, it's not a good movie. It's not a good movie at all. It's not the worst animated movie of the year. In fact, it's only like the third worst. It's better than Norm of the North, and it's better than Ratchet and Clank. I remember laughing. There are one-liners I laughed at, and I'll tell you why I think that is later, but when you played Angry Birds, back the handful of times you did you wonder, what's the origin story here? Why are birds slingshotting themselves at pigs?
Nope, never crossed my mind.
Well, now we know. Now we know why. And it's because you're supposed to fear outsiders. We start on Bird Island, and it's just, you know, island full of birds, and our protagonist is Red. And Red does what we all want to do when we get angry. He has these just sarcastic invective diatribes against, you know, just commonplace things, getting stuck in traffic, had a bad day on the job, and he gets sentenced to the worst punishment available on Bird Island. He gets sentenced to anger management class. And of course, in anger management class, he meets his fellow supporting characters, which are all going to become the heroes, the only people who can save Bird Island.
Yeah, and Red is voiced by Jason Sudeikis, and his voicing is fun. He's had a pretty good year. So I liked individual elements of this movie, but it did not add up to anything. I was not desperate to know the origin story of the Angry Birds. There are a lot of fun, cute puns in this movie, and so I can always appreciate a good pun. But ultimately, it just doesn't add up to anything. I couldn't quite figure out, other than having that moral of the story is that, I don't know, what, a little anger is good for everybody? Perhaps, I'm not sure. But yeah, I can't really recommend it at all.
Well, they They make it seem there's a hint there about why Red is so angry, because he looks around and he lives off on the beach alone and not in town with everybody else, and he looks around and all he sees are couples and friends, and they're kissing each other and they're making eggs, and Red doesn't have anybody, and there's a hint there that that's why he's sad and lonely and mean, because he doesn't have like a girlfriend.
But at the same time, he pushes everyone away, anyone who actually tries to become his friend and tries to include him in things. He, at least in the initial part of the movie, he just wants nothing of it. So he has built a wall around himself, so to speak. And I think this movie has some interesting themes. It tries very hard, but ultimately the story just does not hang together very well.
And the supporting characters, I think they range from strong to very weak. The strong one, I think, is Chuck, the little yellow bird. He's voiced by Josh Gad. It's actually kind of reminiscent of his Olaf character from Frozen. His mind goes faster than his mouth. Like, he does everything at a million miles per hour. It's really funny. So he gets stopped by the cops, and while the cop's writing him a ticket, he runs over to the cop's office and, like, tears it apart. Thought that was really funny. But the stupid, wasted supporting character is Bomb.
Yeah.
And he's voiced by Danny McBride. And Bomb, when he gets embarrassed or really upset, he just kind of explodes. And it blackens up everything with soot. And it looks like one of those old Looney Tune Acme explosions. And he has no jokes. He has no role. It's just kind of what he does.
Yeah.
That's pretty weak.
It did. It wasted some really strong voice talent across the entire movie. And ultimately, I equate it to the mobile app itself, which was what I always called a mindless time suck that I eventually deleted. So essentially, that's what this movie is. It's a mindless time suck that you should just delete.
The pigs, I guess that's what the pigs look like in the game, but compared to the birds, they just looked underdrawn, like these 2D silly little pigs that, it's like they're missing features. They're so bland. And the main pig, Leonard, I think his name was, is voiced by Bill Hader. There's a lot of Saturday Night Live alumni in there.
Yes,
Sudeikis, Bill Hader, Maya Rudolph, Kate McKinnon. I mean, there's a lot. Sean Penn shows up as a voice, and he is Terrence, the really big bird, and all he does is growl. Like, wow, they got Sean Penn to do that?
Yeah.
No, I texted you, like, dude, it's Sean Penn. And you're like, so? I'm like, obviously, exactly. I find that a much bigger deal than you find that.
I did. I just kind of like, so what? The reason that the pigs, the green pigs, are underdrawn is because this is not the pigs movie. It's the Angry Birds movie. It's the birds' origin story. Heaven help us if we get a green pig origin story.
Well, the reason we laughed, I think, as much as we did was because they hired a decent writer. So, shame on the producers for making this in the first place. But they hired a guy who wrote a couple dozen episodes of The Simpsons and King of the Hill and Larry Sanders Show. So this guy knows how to write funny. And for the most part, he did. He got stuck on plot because that's, someone, you got to muddle through that. But there were jokes. And the directors, there was a duo, first-time directors, but they're animators. One comes from the Disney school. Like, he did 2D Pocahontas, Hunchback of Notre Dame, and transitioned later into Wreck-It Ralph and Frozen. And the other guy did, he was a storyboard artist for, like, Iron Giant and Spider-Man 2. So these guys know how to draw. But I think their talents were wasted because there's nothing visually interesting here. There's nothing, it's not pretty. I'm not like, wow, you got to go for how it looks because it doesn't look special.
Yeah, this was a stretch to capitalize on the very, 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 very popular app at the time. And I guess for an animated movie, it was an attempt to rush it to the screen. And they really did not have a script to support it, a story to support it. You're right. There are some very funny lines. And with the right story, who knows what they might have been able to do. Or don't make it about the mobile app at all. Perhaps if they had been able to actually take some of the funnier lines and the best characters and create a completely fresh story and fresh animated movie, this might have actually succeeded on some level, but it was trapped by the Angry Bird app elements.
It sets itself up for a sequel. You can kind of feel, if it makes enough money, you can feel it coming. And I think it will, because I think it will make enough money. That's a side bet I think we'll have about.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I think it's going to win the weekend. It might not beat Captain America, but it's going to be the biggest grossing new release of this weekend. But there is a sequel out this weekend. I didn't see it. I was home alone being a single father, raising a child. But you got to go to the movies at night. What did you see, Hannah?
Oh, these lame excuses, because this movie was really designed for your demographic. It's really for the young couples with young kids. And it is Neighbors 2, Sorority Rising. Mm-hmm. If anyone saw Neighbors 1, it's got the same returning. The core cast is returned of Seth Rogen and Rose Byrne as this young married couple. And Zac Efron as this guy who was the frat guy who had moved in next door to them in the 2014 original Neighbors movie and wreaked havoc until they kind of made up. And then this movie picks up a little bit, I guess, a year or two after that. And the couple is expecting their second kid. And a group of sorority girls, or they're actually rejects, people, these girls who did not want to join a campus sorority because they discovered that they thought it was a very sexist, elitist system, because they also found out that only fraternities were legally allowed to host parties. And apparently that was, maybe was and is the law. And so that just appalled these girls. The head one played by our good friend Chloe Grace Moretz.
From the Fifth Wave.
From the Fifth Wave. And so they form their own sort of counter sorority off campus, and they end up moving into the house next to this couple played by Seth Rogen and Rose Byrne. And they were just about getting ready to sell their house and move further out to the suburbs as they're expecting their second child. And they discover that the sale won't go through until escrow is done. They have 30 days. The new owners have 30 days to back out. And there's a very funny scene with the real estate agent trying to explain to this couple what escrow meant, and that they had agreed to be in escrow and they just had no idea what they had agreed to. And so they're in a panic. These sorority girls move in next door. They end up being these party girls. They don't care that the new owners might actually stop by one day and see what's going on and pull out of the deal. And it's just the whole Zac Efron comes back into the picture because he ends up temporarily sort of moving back into his old house with these sorority girls and mentoring them in how to party. And they then vote him out of the house, and he feels rejected and ends up helping his old neighbors next door in this face-off against the sorority girls. So it's really the exact same theme for the most part. It's the same movie, but it's still very good for a sequel.
I remember Neighbors 1, and I didn't like it very much. I remember there were parts I did laugh at. So there were some funny pranks. It was like a prank war. Mm-hmm. But it didn't add up to anything in the end, and it sounds like they just rehashed it. But you're not the only person I've heard who say, you know what, it's a rare example of a sequel better than the original, but it's already a pretty low bar to clear.
Oh, I don't know. I think it was, I don't know if it's better than the original, but I think it holds up well and is a very satisfying sequel. If anyone liked the first one, I think they're going to enjoy this one too. And you watch the trailer, you know if you're going to like it. Zac Efron is hot as ever, and that plays well into his character development from the first movie to the second. And, you know, it's just, it's got some decent themes about girl power and feminism and the bonds of friendship and sisterhood. And then the things that this young couple goes through, there are actually quite a few what I would call very relatable elements to these characters. And I'll tell you though, speaking of relatable, the weirdest part of this movie is that one of the sorority girls at this house is played by Jonah Hill's sister. Mm. Her name is Beanie Feldstein. That's her actual name. So I guess maybe Jonah Hill has the stage name.
Saying it used to be Jonah Feldstein?
Perhaps. So Beanie Feldstein is in this movie. And about 10 minutes into the movie, somebody in my row pointed out that that was Jonah Hill's sister. And from that point on, nobody could watch this movie and not think that we're watching Jonah Hill in drag, because they had the exact same face.
Ew.
It was creepy. It was weird. And so it's kind of fun to know that now.
I'm sure she's lovely. You're painting this bleak picture about this poor girl.
No, she's absolutely lovely, but she is Jonah Hill with long hair. And I'm telling you, as soon as everyone in my row was aware of it, every time they did a close-up shot of this girl, you just saw Jonah Hill and you just thought, oh my God, these two look so incredibly similar.
That would have driven me through the roof. I hate when people talk during movies, Hannah. And you have all these whispering neighbors too.
I know, but this is one of those movies where you can kind of get away with it. Nobody really will fault you for whispering little tidbits because it's Neighbors too. You're not watching, you know, some deep movie that's going to have like very long silences where somebody's going to be distracted. But I'll tell you, I mean, really, from that moment on, if you ever have a chance to look at a picture of both Jonah Hill and his sister and think about them ever appearing in a movie together, let's just say they'd better play brother and sister if they're ever in a movie together, because otherwise it would be really, really strange.
Well, you would go see it to see Zac Efron. This is not the first time you've mentioned him on this podcast. I would go see it to see Rose Byrne. Man, that girl is
And that's not the first time you've mentioned that in this podcast.
I think it's funny that you bring up the escrow bit, because when I bought my house, we did this escrow business. And you know what? I still couldn't tell you what escrow is.
Right.
I just nod and look interested. Oh, yeah, yeah, escrow. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, and escrow. That's what happens. It is a very, very funny scene. And it really helps set up the entire narrative. And there are a few cameos that come through. Like Kelsey Grammer shows up as the father of one of these sorority girls. And then Lisa Kudrow has a very brief cameo as the dean of the university. And so some of these characters just kind of pop in and out. There's no character development at all, and we never go back to their story. And so that was a little odd. Like Lisa Kudrow,
Wasn't she in the first one?
Maybe she was, but they never go back to her. And so I was kind of surprised. They set up a little bit of a story beat with, the scene that has her in it. And we never really resolve exactly what the campus rules are and what the college's rules were relating to the fraternities and sororities and those who live off campus and what they can and can't do. So it was all a means to an end, but ultimately it was an entertaining sequel. And again, if you like the first one and you like the trailer, go ahead. You will like this one too.
Was Dave Franco in it? He was a main character last time.
Yeah. So Dave Franco is in it, and he's still very good friends with the Zac Efron character. He's in it kind of briefly, and it sets up why Teddy, played by Zac Efron, ends up having to leave the house that he shares with Franco's character. And I'm not going to give away more than that because it's a bit of a twist since the original.
Oh, I'm sure it's a hell of a twist.
I don't want any spoilers for Neighbors 2.
Well, break, on to something completely different. I was not, my apologies, I was not alive in 1977. And if I was, I probably would not have been living in Los Angeles. The Nice Guys takes place in Los Angeles in 1977, and word on the street is, it turns out, that was not a very nice time and place. It was dirty, like pollution, smog. It was corrupt, and, you know, drugs, and just nasty. You remember 1977, and you saw the look of this film. Does this film, The Nice Guys, look like 1977?
Yes, it absolutely does, and the movie itself plays like a mashup of a Starsky and Hutch meets the Rockford Files vibe.
That means nothing to me. That is fascinating.
And the thing is that for anyone who understands those references, they will get what I'm saying, because it is an action comedy crime drama PI sort of mashup. And even down to the old TV series, The Rockford Files, where James Garner plays a PI named Jim Rockford, he charges $200 a day plus expenses. And that's sort of his token line throughout the series. And in this movie, Nice Guys, you have Ryan Gosling playing this sort of down on his luck PI who charges $200 a day. And so there were little tidbits like that that just made it very nostalgic. The look, the clothes, the colors of the appliances, the music, although I will say the At one point, they play the Pina Colada song, Escape, and I had to look up because I thought that was a little later than 77, and sure enough, that was released in 79.
Way to go get him,
Anna. So that was one of my little things where I'm just like, wait a minute, that movie playing in, you know, that soundtrack playing in this movie just feels a little too late for me. But it was just kind of a surprisingly entertaining buddy comedy with some drama mixed in there. What'd you think?
Yeah, it is a buddy comedy, but skewed towards the private eye genre.
Mm-hmm.
It's by a gentleman named Shane Black. He wrote all four Lethal Weapon movies, so that's his, and Last Boy Scout, so that's his kind of genre. He directed Kiss Kiss Bang Bang 2005, Robert Downey Jr., Val Kilmer. Hysterical, I love that movie. And this movie is kind of a companion piece to that film. And weirdly enough, he directed Iron Man 3. So he's back to, I don't know why, but
because Robert Downey Jr. probably asked him to.
Maybe, actually. And so that put him back on the map. So now we get the nice guys. And he's unconventional. You think he would go out and hire comedians, but he went out and hired the best actors out there, really, like bona fide thespians. Like two of the, when you think great actors, I mean, on your top 10 list, you would probably put Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe. These are not comedians. Ryan Gosling got close with The Big Short. But Russell Crowe, I think this might be his first comedy ever. And he plays the straight guy. He gets, you know, he's not a buffoon. But Gosling is Holland March. He's a buffoon. His voice raises octaves a lot when he screams or gets hurt. And he gets hurt a lot. Ryan Gosling, usually, he's kind of an invincible hero.
Mm-hmm.
Not this time. So that kind of throws us out a little bit. Like, Ryan Gosling gets hurt here. And they work. They have a really good chemistry. They have good dialogue, good banter. It's a very well-written movie. I like the look of it better than the plot. The plot is very complicated.
Yes.
They're on a case. Yeah. They're looking for a girl. They're both on separate cases. They combine their talents because they discover this mystery. And it's so complicated to keep up with. In fact, I'm not sure it all ties together in the end.
But right.
It might not matter.
Because it had something to do with a connection between all these murders and the porn industry, which apparently just sort of gave them an excuse to open up this movie by looking at Misty Mountains, exposed breasts, and you know, and that was in what, the first 1 minute of this movie to actually see all Misty Mountains in all her glory. So it's comically absurd, I think, is sort of how this movie plays, and it's outlandish. And there are some really disgusting, shocking, laugh out loud moments. And I think that's what makes it work. And these really good actors playing off each other very well. And the surprise in this one actually is the girl who plays the daughter.
Her name, I know you don't know how to pronounce
it. I don't know how to
pronounce
it.
Her name is Ngauri Rice.
Ah, okay.
Ngauri Rice.
I did not know. I thought maybe it was like,
I'm glad you brought her up. She works.
Angelie.
She is the conscience, actually, of the duo. She keeps them from really going over the edge where they could go. And she reminded me of Inspector Gadget. Penny from Inspector Gadget, if you remember that cartoon. She would help her father, the detective, mm-hmm. stay out of trouble, steer him towards clues, and he had no idea he was actually helping her. And I think her name's Holly in the movie. Holly kind of does the same thing. She hides out in their trunk, and she goes to this big party where they are, and she's the one who gets the clue. She's mm-hmm. the one who finds the girl, actually, and figures it, you know, helps them figure it out. And like, you know what, this works. She's pretty good.
Yeah, and the heart of the movie comes from the relationship that she ends up building and sharing with both of these guys, with both the main characters. And so she's sort of like this kind of Nancy Drew type of wannabe. And I think hopefully we'll see more of her. She could get her own spinoff someday.
Yeah, put the guys together, you know, Crow and Gosling, and they actually are one human being.
Mm-hmm.
Take them apart, and they're each actually kind of missing characteristics that would make a normal functioning human being. Gosling really is just he's missing something. He's nuts.
It's funny. He endures a lot in this movie, and sometimes you're just like, really, how much more can this guy take? And then they pile more on, and you're just kind of shocked.
An Oscar winner shows up, and she doesn't get a lot of screen time, and you don't see her a lot anymore. Kim Basinger is in this movie.
Yeah, like, where for, have what, you been, 5 minutes?
Kim Basinger, I have not, but you have a personal connection to this movie. I didn't know who this actress was. I had no idea, but we walked out of the theater, I'm like, oh, that's Yaya DaCosta.
And, and you
said, well, I know, blah, blah, blah. Why don't you tell us that story?
Yes, I recognize one of the peripheral characters who is sort of a member of the team of Kim Basinger's Justice Department task force on pornography or something like that. I immediately recognize this woman as Yaya, who was, I believe, the first runner-up. She came in like third on cycle 3 of America's Next Top Model that I worked on back in the day. And I knew at the time that she did not have any ambitions about being a model, that she wanted to be famous. She wanted to be an actress. And so it makes me look back at that entire season of Top Model and wonder just how much she was creating a character for herself in acting, which frankly many do in reality shows these days. But seeing her, it took me out of the movie for a moment, because I always reflect back on the real Yaya traipsing through the streets and going on her modeling assignments and causing drama in the house. And so it was a fun little tidbit and recognition aspect to that. So I get a kick out of seeing Yaya on the big screen.
I think you just like saying Yaya.
I like saying Yaya because I'm like the only one. They go, who is that? She looks familiar. And I'm like, that's Yaya.
So it's more, The Nice Guys, it's more straightforward than that other one we were talking about, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. It doesn't go back in time, doesn't really play with the narrative structure, but there's a little Lebowski vibe, a little Big Lebowski vibe. There's a smoking, talking bee that shows up. There's mermaids.
Oh, right. I forgot about the mermaids.
Yeah, and it subverts cliches. You know, even though it's a private eye genre, when something happens, you're like, oh, well, I know what's going to happen next. It doesn't happen next.
The physical comedy is sometimes shocking.
They get in an elevator, and they go up to the penthouse, and they're going to confront the girl. They're going to confront the goons, and they step into this firefight, this massacre, and you think, all right, they're going to dive in, they're going to get in there. No, they just get right back on the elevator and go, oh my God, we almost got hurt up there, you know?
That's right. Well, and the other person, speaking of the bad guys, that makes a brief appearance in this movie is Matt Bomer, another cutie who...
he is known as John Boy.
Yeah, so he's John Boy. So another thread for the 70s nostalgia factor out there is this reference to John Boy, which is the nickname of this assassin who looks remarkably like...
A little bit.
The John Boy character from The Waltons, the actor Richard Thomas.
And I like why he did that, because you've got this just psychopathic villain who sprays like Uzi bullets all over the suburban street, but he goes by the name of one of America's golden boys.
Yes. Yeah, the sweet, harmless John Boy. But then when you really see, they did a pretty good job of making Matt Bomer up to look a lot like him. And then you really get the comic effect when you see him face on, full face, even down to the little mole on his face. You realize why he's got the name John Boy.
I think he was one of the guys, by the way, from Magic Mike.
Yes, indeed he is.
Remember that name?
He looked a lot better in Magic Mike. And he was in White Collar, the series, and good looking guy.
All right, well, good. Thumbs up for The Nice Guys. I really got a kick out of that movie. Some people didn't. They walked out like, I hated that movie.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not going to name drop you, Christian, but...
one of our few listeners. Yeah, but I liked it. I think, again, it's an R-rated action crime dramedy. So if that sounds like something that would appeal to folks or anyone who lived through the 70s, I think they might like this one.
And now for something completely different. A new film based on Jane Austen. Pride and Prejudice, Northanger Abbey, you name it. Women love it. Jane Austen, Love and Friendship. I didn't see it. Hannah, take it away.
How could you not see it? It's such a...
Because you didn't tell me you're driving, and I don't want to take the subway.
You're the one who always tells me, why are you afraid of taking the subway?
I was
the
tired.
The metro. Exactly, and that's why I dragged myself down there driving, because it was a good night to drive downtown. But so I did go see Love and Friendship, also really because I thought for sure you'd be there, and I was not ready to have to deal with the fact that you would give me huge grief for not seeing what you consider to be a quintessential chick flick.
I never called this a chick flick.
Yes,
I didn't say anything about this movie.
No, you
even
did.
Even though it screams chick flick.
No,
because, oh, Jane
you
Austen.
Did. You definitely, on Monday night, I was talking to somebody and you said I needed to go see Love.
You know why
Friendship.
I didn't want to see this movie? My mom texted me and asked me if I saw this movie. That immediately said, I don't want to see this movie.
Well, and I was actually not all that into seeing it. I'm just not a huge Jane Austen fan. I'm not a fan of these like very slow British indies. But I actually thought it was okay.
What?
I know. Because you would have liked it because you would have liked it for Kate Beckinsale.
She looks Kate Beckinsale.
Amazing in this movie. I got to say, not only does she look amazing, she carries this movie entirely.
You remember what she wore in the Underworld franchise?
No.
Is it really better than full-clad leather? I mean, really?
Yes, you know, when you're like pent up in austere, polite society attire. But she has some incredibly witty banter, and it's a very nuanced role for her. She's very manipulative and funny, and she is the take charge chick of this movie. And so she plays this beautifully manipulative widow, Lady Susan Vernon, and she basically goes to visit the estate of her brother and sister-in-law, and she's really going just to hide out because she's been having these dalliances with married men and stuff. And so she needs to kind of lay low for a while.
A wanton woman.
While polite society is figuring out what to do about her. And
scandal.
It's a bit of scandal. And but also very much about female empowerment amid this whole social strata where everything's based on, you know, the property that the men own and how things are handed down. And so she doesn't really have the money from her husband, and she's got this daughter, and she ends up getting she basically can wrap any guy around her finger. And so she's got three different ones in this movie that she sort of is stringing along at different times. And one is sort of the young, impressionable, single guy who really should be looking more at her daughter than her and is sure he's going to hate this woman. But then, of course, she changes his mind. And then there's this really silly doofus who's more age appropriate. He's such an idiot that you really can't ever expect that relationship to go anywhere. And then you've got her relationship with a married man, and so you know that's never going to end well. And he was divinely handsome, I should say.
Divinely.
Lord Manwaring.
Oh, Manwaring, yes.
Yes. So anyway, anyone who... My friend Eileen went and saw this one, too, who likes Jane Austen, likes period pieces.
She likes my movies, not yours.
Exactly. So she did not particularly like this one. I think it was a little too lighthearted. And the stuff that made it somewhat appeal to me, that made it not so grim and proper, are the very things that a Jane Austen purist might not particularly like this movie. And those who prefer a deeper, drier, more complicated plot might not like this movie, I think, more than they would otherwise thought. So what that all means for the box office appeal, I'm not sure, because I don't really know where
no one's going to see this movie.
No one, except more people will see this movie than the next one, Charlie. Speaking of
I'm so
long,
excited to hear about this next
boring, drawn-out period pieces that don't appeal to mainstream chicks like me.
Man, this next one is, I'm not gonna lie, it's long and there's a lot of plot going on in there. It's actually based on one of Scotland's most beloved novels ever. It's still taught in school. Scottish people love this book. This is their national book. It's called Sunset Song. It was written in 1932 by a man named Lewis Grassic Gibbon. I don't think anyone out of Scotland actually knows about this book. I had never heard of it. But new movie star alert, Agnes Dane. She's way too good looking to play this hard scrub manure walking farm girl in near Aberdeen, I guess is where it is. And we look at the actress is Agnes. She plays Chris Guthrie.
Chris, right.
And we look at the life of Chris from when she's 15, 16 to, you know, man, there's so many things that happen to this girl. Her father is awful. He's very, I called it paternal hegemony.
Yeah, I didn't know what you meant by that.
So he's very abusive, and he takes it all out on her brother mostly. And then he treats his wife kind of like a sex slave almost, just like breeding stock. Mm-hmm. And she has a severe case of postpartum depression and does something about it. And then father has a stroke, and then brother runs away. Then we meet the fiance, and he takes a turn. There's a big storm involved. Oh, my God.
What's not to like?
So much going on in here. She's good. She's just got way too much to do. It's a good-looking film. It's mm-hmm. Terrence Davies. Terrence Davies loves complicated women. 2000's The House of Mirth. Gillian Anderson was Lily Bart, pardon me. God, I hated that movie. And 2011's The Deep Blue Sea. That was Rachel Weisz playing another just character I wish I'd never met. So this is his third really complicated woman film. I'm in the middle on it. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. Some people love this movie big time.
Who?
Hannah, I got a feeling about what you're going to say here.
I looked at this as sort of making yet another 1970s television reference. This to me was like a dark and depressing Little House on the Prairie gone awry in Scotland.
Yeah.
Oh,
man, Michael Landon was a bad guy.
horrifying, horrifying. I lasted 12 full minutes.
It is a 135-minute movie, Hannah.
At the 12-minute mark, when I saw that it was 135 minutes long, I went, no, I cannot do this to myself. I was done. At 12 minutes, I was done. And so then I did, you know, my really bad thing, like skimming through a book. And I skimmed through the rest of the movie and watched the last 5 minutes. And I was like, oh, well, that ended well.
when she got married, and that's a little bit more, that's like at the 70-minute mark, I thought, oh, this must be ending now. And I saw how much I had left. It looked like I had another movie left. I was shocked. I was like, are you kidding me?
I skimmed through. It's like 20 minutes, 20 minutes, 20 minutes. And each time I stopped and watched for 30 seconds, it was even more depressing than the previous parts I had seen, except she was happy for a little while in there.
Yeah, there's a very big, the but whole middle part to, is happiness.
Yeah, but the middle part doesn't come in like well over an hour into this thing. And you're right, the actress who plays Chris is very good.
She's a model, by the way, and she's just too good looking.
She is really good to watch. She again, it's like this whole week, it was the women who carry these movies, I think.
It's the third time you've actually brought up that, you know, Neighbors 2 mm-hmm. had this feminist streak, mm-hmm. love and friendship, feminism, yeah. you know, yeah. and there's some
and
feminism here
too.
She takes over the farm.
Yeah.
She inherits the farm.
Yeah.
And she runs her own farm, not for long, because people are like, you can't live alone, you're a woman.
Right, but, just like love and friendship. And Neighbors 2 kind of takes that mantle too. They're saying, you know, why should the rules be different for the sorority girls than they are for the fraternity boys? And the couple in Neighbors 2 is raising two daughters, or, you know, one daughter and with another on the way. And it's so they're all the movies this week really kind of in very, very, very different ways showed some pretty great female empowerment. So that part's good. And you're right. It was beautiful from what I saw, the scenery.
And it's not Scotland. The outside was filmed in New Zealand. The inside was filmed in Luxembourg.
Yeah.
The only thing shot in Scotland was when it's dark and raining outside.
Oh, and the other thing you have to mention, too, is that there are English subtitles in this movie that's in English.
Thank God.
Because you would not, every time a character was not facing the camera, anything that they would have said, you would not have been able to understand their dialect.
It's thick.
It's thick. It's very strange to me to be watching a movie in English and be reading subtitles the whole way through. So,
but I learned what a bairn was.
Yes, you do. You pick up a lot of these words.
Oh, that's a bairn. Okay.
She's a
bairn. You can have a bairn of your own.
When you have a bairn of your own, then you'll understand. So
I knew you were going to hate this movie.
I
knew you were going to hate this movie.
I 12 minutes in, I said, oh, Charlie's going to love this, that I'm already bailing.
It,
no, I knew you'd love the fact that I was bailing after 12 minutes.
No, I'm just, you fulfilled my expectations.
Exactly.
I didn't think you were going to even start it, but 12 minutes is probably around what I guess you would last.
And then I did. I spent about another 15 minutes just scrolling through, trying to figure out if I was making sure that I wasn't missing something. and I wasn't. And really, this is not, nobody's going to see this movie.
I bet it's breaking box office records in Scotland.
Yeah. And so, yes, if the Scots who actually maybe read the book, and if anyone liked the book, sure, go for it. Go see this movie, because I guess you're not going to be terribly surprised by the hardships that this poor woman faces. But it is not an entertaining movie. So to me, if you're going to pick a slow plotting indie period piece, pick the more lighthearted Love and Friendship over this epic drama.
Well, life back then in rural Scotland was rough. Like, they're not sugarcoating it. That's probably what happened in every household. But it reminded me of Far From the Madding Crowd a little bit. Ugh. So much plot.
But ugh. I liked Far From the Madding Crowd way more than this one. Far From the Madding Crowd was way more accessible. This one's not nearly as accessible to the mainstream as Far From the Madding Crowd was.
You mentioned when you came over tonight that this is an anniversary of something. And it's one of those anniversaries that I don't care how old you are, it's going to make you feel old, unless you're too young to remember the movie Hannah's about to mention.
Yes, this is the 30th anniversary week of Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Man.
That is a classic. And you know, I had to do a twist and shout out to Ferris Bueller.
Well done.
Danke schön. Because it really was just one of those movies that when you think back at that, it's been 30 years and somebody can still turn to you and go, Bueller, Bueller.
Abe Froman, Sausage King of Chicago.
Exactly. And it just reminds you sometimes when there are these movies that we talk about that are just so fleeting in memory that you know that you watch them and they're gone. Angry Birds, Norm of the North. But I don't think I realized when I watched this movie in the movie theater 30 years ago, and it was around the time that I was actually going to school just outside Chicago, and I became one of those people who skipped classes to go see the Cubs play at Wrigley Field during the day before there were lights. And so the movie just holds a special place. I'm just glad that that it's kind of getting its due again, that people are remembering Matthew Broderick for that, for really what was his...
It didn't launch him. He was already a star.
He was already a star. But this one, you just can't look at Matthew Broderick at all, ever, and not see Ferris Bueller, at least some kernel of Ferris Bueller in everything he plays.
For the longest time, I thought you actually could put a car in reverse and it would reverse the odometer. Because of this movie. That's a plot hole right there, Hannah.
Spoiler alert.
And people forget, Charlie Sheen's in this movie. He leans over to Jennifer Grey and stares at her with these bloodshot eyes and says, drugs.
You know, and Jennifer Grey before you put Baby in a corner, you know?
Yeah, it's 3 years before Baby.
So yeah. I just think that it's nice every once in a while to remember what holds up over time. And so it'll be fascinating when you're sitting here 30 years from now, Charlie, doing your movie reviews, talking to somebody.
Well, whoever was sitting here 30 years ago when they doing their Ferris Bueller podcast in 1984, there's no way they could expect that it would become the cult classic it has become.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And it is. It's one of those ones you can just tune in to. You can just watch it on TV at any point, just tune in and out of it at various points, see that parade going on in downtown Chicago.
Oh, the closing Newton, credits. Oh,
everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're looking at the principal get on the bus.
Yep. So it's joyous and scary at the same time that it's 30 years.
Whatever happened to Mia Sara, who played Sloane?
The girlfriend, right?
Yeah. She was hot.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe she's not so hot anymore. I'll have to look her up.
Mia Sara, if you're listening.
We're sure you're still lovely.
All right, to wrap up, the Angry Birds movie is stupid.
it's like the app. Timeless. Timeless.
No, it's already gone.
Mindless, time suck, delete, delete, delete.
Neighbors 2, Sorority Rising.
Actually, quite good. If you like the first one, you'll like this one. It's pretty simple. If you never had any inclination to see the first one and you think that the trailer looks stupid, stay far away.
The Nice Guys. Mystery, Private Eye, it's funny, great actors, it works.
Yeah. Yeah, an interesting R-rated adult movie action comedy. So I think especially the 70s nostalgia factor is high. If you live through that period, check it out.
Love and Friendship.
Oh, yeah, I'm the only one who saw that one.
Shut up, Hannah.
Yes, that Kate Beckinsale, amazing performance. It's too long, it's a little slow, but it's got some really witty moments. So if you like the genre of these period pieces and you prefer them to be a little more lighthearted, go check it out. If you're a Jane Austen purist and you really don't particularly like a somewhat superficial plot, then you might not really enjoy this one.
Sunset Song, not superficial. Too much going on. Chick is way too hot to play her character, but I think this is, we're going to see her again. It's not very good.
Again, 12 minutes. I lasted 12 minutes.
That's standard for you. There's like one of those a week for you. Best movie this week, The Nice Guys.
I actually would put The Nice Guys and Neighbors 2 kind of neck and neck. I'll be very curious to see which one ekes out, because I think they have a very similar demographic that they might be targeting, and one is just more of a straight out comedy in Neighbors 2, and I would say that Nice Guys has a little more of a dramedy twist to it.
And I know, I think we're split on this, and if you're up for it, I will make a bottle of wine bet for next week, if you're up for it, on which new release scores highest at the box office. Captain America is probably still going to win the box office, but I think by far the highest grossing new release will be the Angry Birds movie.
Well, you're going to have to give me make the spread something, because my fear is that...
I think it'll be by over $10 million.
I'm going to take that bet, because I do think that Neighbors 2 and The Nice Guys will split a lot of the audience, and so I think they're both going to come out kind of within 10 million of each other, or within a few million. Actually, I would almost say they're going to come out pretty close.
Angry Birds win over $10 million.
So over $10 million. I'll take that bet, Charlie, with better wine.
Hey, this is just what happened to me here. I'm just saying. All right. Once again, thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah is presented twice each weekend on RadioSt.Pete.com at 5:15 Eastern on Saturday and 9:15 on Sunday mornings. Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net. Listen again for Cinema Clash on RadioSt.Pete.com.